Hello everyone, and welcome back to Slapcast. This is another episode, episode 10 to be specific. I don't know when or why I stopped doing that, of our coverage of the 2023-24 season. I am sure that all of you at home relished a chance to get your fix of Slapcast without having to endure my blithering and nagging, but alas, I've returned from the ether to grace your eardrums with my sound waves once again. I'm your host, Gage, as usual, and I'm pleased to say that I'm joined in this particular expedition by Reese. Hello, Reese.
Hello.
I'm also joined by Ethan. Ethan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm happy to be back, but as many of our more discerning listeners will have picked up on, me asking Ethan that question, of course, signals that we are sans brother Josh for this week, and we will be without him next week as well, as he is off on what I'm going to call a work trip. He's on a work trip.
Yep.
So that was the... stops for no one, including Josh. So we're going to get started with the question of the day, which I think is what you're about to say.
So. Yeah. So in Josh's honor, I will ask a Halloween-themed question because, you know, we're getting ready for Halloween. It's spooky month, one more week before Halloween. Definitely been asked before, but give me your favorite candy that you would get on Halloween and your one that you would trade a lot that you did not want to see.
So my favorite. Oh, you go first.
I'll go first so you can think about it. So the one I always looked forward to getting was either Kit Kats, Hershey bars, or Reese's. I know that's a lot. I usually find Reese Hyatt in my pillowcase, I guess.
In your pillowcase?
Yeah, you trick or treat with a pillowcase.
Wait, what?
Have you not heard of that?
No, I've always heard of like you have like a little like a preordained basket or something that you carry around.
I've had baskets, but I've also used pillowcases before.
No kidding.
But the two that I always tried to trade were the Tootsie Roll and the like Whoppers.
Like Whopper, little... Whopper, 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 Whopper. This might be an unpopular opinion, but the one that I was always looking out for and the ones that I would always be super psyched to get were those little boxes of Nerds, the tiny ones, the pink and purple ones, because what I would always do is open up the box and just dump the entire thing in my mouth, consume all of them in one bite. That's the way you got to do it with those little packs of Nerds. But
the Nerd runs on Nerds.
The Nerd runs on Nerds. What a shocker. As far as trading, you never want to see the Crunch Bar. You never want to see a Snickers. I'm just saying.
What are you talking about?
You never want to see them in the bag, dude. I'm trading them away.
Trade them to me. I will give you all my shit, Andy.
Crunch Bar and Snickers is maybe the worst picks of all time.
Dude, I'm just saying. Like, there's so many. I'm not saying they're bad. Like, I'll eat them. But as far as.
Well, you won't. You're trading them.
I'm trading them, but there are many candies that are better. There's just many options like that nerds. Are better out there. Like, yes, like Nerds. Okay, and I'm now going to go turn off this light that is shining on me like an angel to fix my...
It's like that picture where he's like doing that. He's like, I give you my good candy, or give me your good candy for your bad candy.
Yeah. Because
you want fucking Nerds.
In line with my namesake, Reese's are my favorite candy, but they weren't always. I'm a Kit Kat guy as well. Kit Kats go crazy. Also M&M's. I'm a big M&M-er. Especially the little mini ones where you can like, kind of like the Nerds where you can kind of dump the whole thing in your mouth. I was a big fan of the like miniature packet of it or the tiny ones.
The mini ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trading, I don't even know. Smarties, maybe? I didn't really
what?
Like Smarties.
I think that's one of the craziest takes I've ever heard.
They were just a little too tart. I don't know. I like, I'm a big chocolate guy. And I can get behind some tartness, but it's not really what I want. Like, I prefer a Crunch Bar, for starters. I prefer Snickers. I prefer Hershey's. Pretty much anything chocolatey. I like more than a tart.
Can I revise my answer on what I want to trade?
Go ahead.
I want to trade fucking Airheads, dude. Those are, they've got to be down there with some of the worst candy ever. Them no. And the freaking Airheads. You probably don't get these on Halloween, but the Airheads ropes, you know, the really long rainbow ones.
I kind of like Airheads. Airheads,
aren't they?
Are you thinking of like fruit by the foot or
no, 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 no. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. It's like the long the rope green with package. The sour stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like a long piece of taffy with like sugary kind of coating on them. It's like a sour Skittle, but super long.
Yeah.
Like,
this is crazy how much we disagree. Like this is the one time we're all like, no.
I'm not having Airheads, dude. Like, I'm just not having them.
Y'all remember those, like, they were like those gummy, like, gumdrops?
Like, Mike and Ike's.
No, those are like hard candy. I'm thinking no, like
soft like ones. Dots? Are you talking about dots? Dots.
Yeah. Dots. You can have all those.
What?
I'll take them. Oh,
come on now.
No, you cannot say you liked them. They tasted like nothing.
I did like them. I'll take the dots.
They tasted like nothing. They tasted like nothing.
Give me your dots.
I'm taking the dots.
I'm going to buy you a bunch of dots for Christmas.
Well, it's not my preferred candy. Might be a little sad about that, but I will eat them.
Better than the gift of nothing.
That's true.
What a great question of the day by Ethan. An excellent, excellent piece of work.
I would like to think that that was a birth child of Josh. He asked that a long time ago.
Did he really? I thought his Halloween question was our favorite costume.
He's definitely asked about candy before. Because I remember you talking about Reese's one at one point.
Probably.
He is a man with many questions to ask. So... All right, let's get into the mystery segment for the week. We have decided to shake things up a little bit, and this was inspired by a conversation that we had while we were all playing Pro Clubs, or I guess it's not even called Pro Clubs anymore, is it? It's called Clubs. On FC24. Yeah, okay. This was inspired by a conversation we were having where we brought up, you know, who's the top five greatest players of all time? Of course, normal names were getting thrown around, Messi, Ronaldo, Pele, Maradona, etc. Well, we decided to narrow that down for the mystery segment and discuss our top five players from our clubs, respectively, of all time. And then we narrowed it down even further by deciding to limit that only to the Premier League era. Of course, we didn't watch all of the Premier League era, but once you go further past that, I feel like you start to get into territory where the game was so different that it's almost impossible to compare. And truthfully, I mean, even since the 90s, the game is so different that it's hard to compare now. So coincidentally, only one of my players even played a game in the 90s, which is maybe recency bias more than anything. But let's go. Well, how should we do this? Should we go from the bottom up?
Yeah, 5-1.
Okay.
Each give our fives. That's what I think would be good.
Then you get to go first.
All right, I'll go first. So this, I'll give a little teaser for my full list. Unlike Gage, Arsenal's history outweighs our recent performances, I would say up until very recently, right? So all of my players, I did not get to watch them play. Wow. I only heard about them. But I promise I've done the due diligence. I've watched clips, researched, I know their accolades. So this isn't I'm not just guessing, right? But number five, going with Patty V, Patrick Vieira, Invincibles captain. The other thing about him that I thought is very interesting is that I think the DM position has really changed over the course of the Premier League. And I think the current iteration of it, you know, your Rodri's or even Declan Rice, like this big guy who's kind of acting as a quarterback and just a destroyer, I think is modeled after Patty V. I think he's kind of the guy that it's going back towards. So, yeah, he's my number five.
Ethan.
So this list is going to be kind of funny for me because obviously the Premier League started in, you know, 92. We haven't been up every single season. You know, we've been up and down a few times. So I, you know, obviously we've had great players over the years, but a lot of them have been in the championship. So this is going to be a little random, but For number five, I went Johan Kabay, just because I think when we brought him in, it kind of sealed, or it was very, very much a statement signing. You know, he was a great Premier League player before that, and you know, he just had the quality to add to this team, and we ended up building on that. So I think that signing him was like a big contribution to us being in the Premier League for a long time.
My number five is a player who had three stints at the club, actually, across multiple years, and scored over 100 goals, and that would be Jermaine Defoe, who has, you know, spent time around the Premier League in various different locations, but he actually originally came through the academy at West Ham. I was going to say he came through the academy at Spurs, but he didn't. He came through the academy at West Ham, at which point Spurs bought him on a discounted fee, and he's kind of been hanging and lingering around the club ever since in some capacity. He's always going to be beloved by, you know, Spurs fans worldwide. He's the only Spurs player ever to score five goals in one game in the Premier League, which was, of course, against Wigan in the 9-1 dismantling of them in the late 2000s. And he is a member of the Premier League 100 club, although he wouldn't be if you only took his Spurs goals. He did score 100 for us in all competitions, but not in the Premier League. But yeah, I just think Jermaine Defoe was someone who was involved in getting the club to the Champions League for the first time. He played a huge part in that with his partnership up top with Peter Crouch. And just all of his contributions on and off the field to the club, I think, warrant him the number five spot.
I'll go number four. It's Ian Wright. I think, you know, he held the goal scoring record for the club before a certain somebody who is much higher up on this list broke it once again, but just a phenomenal record. And it's been said, you know, I was in doing some research. This is kind of a quote that is attributed, not that Ian Wright said it, but it's like constantly said about him, is that there's people who score lots of goals and people who score great goals, and Ian Wright did both. You should just take a look at the kind of goals he was scoring. I mean, the sheer quantity is itself impressive, but they're all just phenomenal. I mean, he was just a great player. I wrote the numbers down: 185 and 288 appearances. That includes substitute appearances, though. So pretty good return. And yeah, unfortunately, not much to show for it in terms of Premier League titles. I think he only had one, and it was when he was 34. I think that's correct. But, you know, just a great player for the club. And even now, he's very heavily involved. A really big presence online, a very positive presence as well, which I can't say for all of our former players. But yeah, I think he's just a great, great player and a great person to still be associated with the club for sure.
I'm glad you mentioned him, because I would have put him, but you know, obviously he was playing for us when it was still called the first division, so I couldn't put him. But my number four is someone y'all probably don't know, but Chris Armstrong. For the longest time, he held the goal scoring record in terms of Premier League goals for Palace. It was broken by my number one pick not too long ago, but yeah, I you know, obviously I didn't get to watch him play at all, but you know, hearing a lot of good things about him and watching old clips, I can tell he was important for us in those years at the beginning.
He scored a bunch of goals for Spurs too. He actually played for Spurs back in the early 2000s. Yeah, he scored. I think he's in our top 10 all-time Premier League scorers, actually.
Oh, he joined y'all after us.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, shout out to Chris Armstrong. My number four is another player who I didn't get to watch, but who is kind of heralded as one of the greatest players who's ever played for Spurs and one of the great captains of Spurs. And if it weren't for injuries, he probably would be higher on this list, truthfully. And that's Ledley King, the legendary center back who, you know, spent the late 90s and the entirety of the 2000s marshaling the defense. You know, at times the stories go back to how his knees were so injured and almost unusable that he would not train during the week at all. He would just do some light, you know, rehabilitation work, and he would come out and play the games, and he would be the best player on the pitch every time. Just some incredible defending, incredible intelligence. And yeah, like I said, were it not for injuries, he probably could have been a mainstay in the England team. And he could have been at Spurs for many more years down the line. So, of course, he is still at the club involved in many, many ways. He's Mr. Tottenham more than anyone else probably ever has been. Played his whole career there. He's now a club ambassador. He's coaching in our youth academy system. So, yeah, just a guy who's been involved in all facets and who was an excellent, excellent defender on his day. And fun fact, has the fastest ever goal scored in Premier League history, in spite of the fact that he's a center back.
Wow.
So I think when he scored that goal, he was actually starting in defensive midfield. But still, yeah, after I think 7.1 seconds or something like that. So, yeah, a little fun fact about Ledley there. But the king of White Hart Lane. And he is, by the way, Spurs have never officially retired number 26, but no one has worn it since he wore it. So just kind of an interesting little tidbit.
Well, from one defender and captain to another, I've got Tony Adams. Similarly to how you described him as Mr. Tottenham, Tony Adams is Mr. Arsenal through and through. He actually captained the side to not four Premier Leagues, but four titles across 3 decades. And that is 2 First Division titles and 2 Premier Leagues. He's earned himself a statue at the Emirates as well. And his daughter, I think it's his daughter, is plays for the Arsenal women, and I believe is the captain, or maybe his granddaughter, related to him in some capacity, closely related. And yeah, she's a defender for the Arsenal women. But yeah, I mean, I obviously didn't get to watch him play. Very similar story, but you know, it just speaks for himself. Four titles across 3 decades is crazy. And the captain for all of them is just unbelievable.
So this one's kind of out of left field for my number three. I was on the fence because, you know, this is, y'all are going to think this is funny, but at first I was going to have Christian Benteke here just because I think his first season was so revolutionary. Obviously, it didn't finish the way, but I think all parties would have wanted it to, but he had contributed a lot. That first season when we had huge striker problems, but I'm over rethinking it and like looking at, you know, other people's opinions. I'm going to go with Attilio Lombardo. He only played a few games for Palace, but apparently from what I heard, he contributed a lot and was just such a big name player for us, considering, you know, how popular he was and for Italy and, you know, just being able to have him for like a season or season and a half, you know, I'll take it.
My number three is someone that I wax lyrical about all the time and will probably wax lyrical about more later on in this podcast, and that is Sun Heung-min, the South Korean sensation who is our second ever player to score over 100 goals for Spurs in the Premier League. He can do it all, obviously, apart from last season, which wasn't his best at the club ever. He was carrying a hernia through the entire season, as it was revealed later, so kind of makes sense why he had a down year. But apart from that, he's been lights out, you know, consistently been either the best or second best player for Spurs over the course of that time. And it's a good thing that after his first season, Pochettino blocked his exit because he wasn't happy after his first season at Spurs and wanted to leave, but Pochettino blocked the exit. And then the rest is history since then, really. He's given almost 10 years of service to the club now, and he's the newly appointed club captain, and couldn't be happier for him. Obviously off the pitch as well, just his personality, his demeanor, his general likableness, as it seems. I think this is another fun fact, though, about him being the happy, you know, kind of smiley guy. I think he is tied for all-time most red cards by a Spurs player in the Premier League with 3. So,
well, I wouldn't
interesting,
that.
Interesting stat from him. Yeah, a couple. He used to have quite the tendency to lash out. I think two of his red cards were both from lashing out in a scenario, and the other one was when he broke Andre Gomez's leg, which was later rescinded, of course. But yeah, another just random little tidbit about him. But I don't really need to talk too much about him, as everyone knows kind of what Sonny's up to. So
As I get to my number two, I wanted to say something that I found funny. So I made the full list, and then after the fact, I was doing some research. I was like, I wonder if there's like general consensus online. So I was just trying to see if other people's lists, and Arsenal Football Club actually has a section for it on their website of just historically their top 50 players, and their top five matches mine exactly. So no I'm way. Pretty sure the top five is pretty unanimous among Arsenal fans. As I get to my number two, which is Dennis Bergkamp. He's kind of a player that a lot of people say you just had to be there. Like, he's just that guy. Henri claims he's the best player he played alongside. And yeah, I mean, just phenomenal. There's the scenario where I believe it was like, he was nominated for every goal of the month award for that month, or maybe two out of three of them. I don't know how many nominees there are, but he had multiple nominees for goal of the month within the same month. And I believe that was the famous goal against Newcastle, which some people say was a mistake.
It was a fluke.
I was actually watching a clip. I believe, oh, who was it? I'm forgetting who it was now, but a famous former player, now commentator. I'm completely forgetting his name. Anyway, he was on a podcast.
Alan Smith, maybe.
Maybe we couldn't.
Paul Merson. I don't know.
I don't want to make it up. I literally can't remember his name, but he was on a podcast and he said that he had spoken to Dennis Bergkamp about that goal and said, you know, so many people think that goal was a fluke. Can you walk me through it? And he started by saying like, yeah, it's partially a fluke. And he's like, oh my God, this is the scoop. And then what Bergkamp ended up saying was that his first touch, he wanted it to be slightly different so he could spin the other way. And he messed that up. So he had to change midway and flick it around the defender. So the goal itself was not the fluke part. It was like the buildup to it or something stupid. But yeah, he was... From what I can tell, you had to be there. He was just that guy.
My number two is AJ, Andy Johnson. He might not have the record, or did not at any point have the record for most Premier League goals for Palace, but he did have the most goals scored in a single season in the Premier League for us. And, you know, it might have only been one season in the Premier League with him, but he had always been, you know, someone who contributed in the goal areas. He's one of those players I wish I really had seen play, just because he looked like he was always having fun playing and scoring goals for fun. So yeah, number two.
My number two has come in the form of another player who had multiple stints at Spurs, and that is Gareth Bale, who of course was absolutely lights out in his first stint at Spurs. Of course, he started as a left back and then gradually kept moving more and more forward on the pitch. Was hugely instrumental in the years of Harry Redknapp, whenever Spurs were knocking on the door of becoming a Champions League contender. And the season, the 2012-13 season before he left for Real Madrid on a world record transfer fee, was one of the most ridiculous individual seasons in Premier League history. The guy had 23 or 24 goals. I can't remember how many. Came second in the Golden Boot race, and a lot of them were screamers from 35 yards, just ridiculous goals that should never be going in from where he was shooting from. Just such an inventive player, such a physical specimen. And then, of course, leaves on a world record transfer fee and ends up coming back on loan. Sadly, a season where no fans were in the stadium. Which is a huge bummer, because it would have been interesting to see how the fans would have reacted to having him back at the club. It was good to see. He did score. There's some revisionist history on this, by the way. I always think back and think, yeah, he was on loan, but he didn't contribute all that much, blah, blah, whatever. He played 18 games and scored 10 goals. So not a bad return from Gareth Bale. Of course, now retired. But yeah, what an excellent player. What a delightful player to watch. And of course, he went on to win about a bajillion trophies for not Spurs, but still just goes to speak to the quality of player that he is. So,
to absolutely no one's surprise, my number one is Thierry Henry, Arsenal's record goal scorer.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Scoring goals, registering assists for fun. Invincible. So many moments too. I mean, obviously there's the famous one against Spurs. I won't get too much into that. There's the one where he scores a free kick. Referee says, no, you're too close. Take it for further away. Scores it again. Looks at the ref, says, was that far enough? And then goes and celebrates. You know, goals against every top club imaginable. Probably goals against every club he's faced. I'm just guessing, but that may not actually be true. But so many great goals too, and just absolutely clinical. I think he also has a statue at the Emirates. I mean, surely he does.
It's that. It's the moment, that Spurs moment when Spurs he's sliding on his knees. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just phenomenal player.
All right. Also, no surprise. If this is not all Palace fans, number one, they're smoking crack. It's Mr. Crystal Palace, Wilfried Zaha. Unfortunately, you know, joined Galatasaray this past season, but he has been Mr. Crystal Palace Premier League for the longest time, always contributing, always being our star boy. You know, he's just been great every time, and he's just a different breed and all he's done for the club. And, you know, he's provided things on the field and outside the field. So, you know, when I think of my time as a fan, I think about the time where Wilfried Zaha was leading the team out, being the star man. So, Wilfried, if you're watching, thank you for making me fall in love.
Yeah, similarly to Ethan, it's a player for me who just left the club this summer. It's some guy who plays in Germany. Not sure who that is, but yeah, no, Harry Kane obviously is my number one, you know, third all-time Premier League goal scorer. All of those goals with Spurs. Highest single club goal scorer in Premier League history. About a billion other records, the most headed goals in Premier League history, the most goals with his weak foot in Premier League history, the most away goals in Premier League history, all kinds of records. And it's just unfortunate that he never got to win a trophy at Spurs. Obviously, it's going to be the thing that's held over him for a long time as far as his time at the club. But, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. Plenty of people have won the Premier League, but not too many people have scored 200 goals in it. So, I think, you know, he will obviously go down in history as one of the greatest Premier League players ever to play, and I think rightfully so. So maybe, hopefully one day we'll see him back at Spurs. I don't know. I mean, right now I'm doing fine just without him as we're top of the league. But, of course, Harry Kane would be number one. So
I'll say I'm really jealous of y'all. I really wish I could have had any players from when I was watching in my top five. But
yeah. It is. I mean, Harry Kane, it does. I do feel incredibly lucky to have started watching the season that he made his breakthrough, because he feels like one of these players that only comes along for your club once. Like, you only get one academy product who goes on to become one of the greatest. Like, I genuinely don't think we'll ever see a player like him at Spurs again. Just such a generational, incredible talent the way he is. So, and by the way, he has more goals than he does appearances for Bayern already. So he's continuing his high goal scoring trend. Of course it is Bayern, but still you do have to put him in the net. So yeah. Interestingly enough, the mural that they just painted of him is still on the Tottenham High Road, which is a little awkward, walking out of the stadium and seeing this huge mural of a guy who doesn't even play for the club anymore. Is actively playing for someone else, but yeah. Interesting thing there. But any other notes, gentlemen? Any honorable mentions, any names you wanted to throw into the ring before we move on?
There were many players that I had to like not consider, just because, you know, I feel like they had more an impact in our times getting promoted. But like Mile Jedinek, longest time he was our captain, obviously, you know, wasn't breaking any stat records or anything like that, but obviously wore the armband for the longest time since I had been watching, and I guess just throughout the 2010s, so for the most part. So yeah, respect to him. But there was definitely a lot of players who had done so well that were either in like the championship or just before it became the Premier League. So yeah, this is funny making this list.
We've got some news items to discuss from the week just gone by, two of them specifically. Of course, funny enough, neither of them are actually confirmed news, but they're both just things that might be happening, as the journalists have put it. First and foremost is, of course, Everton, it's come out today, might be facing a 12-point deduction for one breach of the FFP regulations. Now, it's interesting that this has come now in a summer when they've hardly spent any money, and last summer they didn't spend too much money either. I guess it's just the investigation has caught up to them for all the years of reckless spending. I don't especially understand the timing of this, but it could, of course, significantly shake up the relegation battle, as if this were to go through, it would put them on, well, it obviously wouldn't go through this week, but just theoretically, if it did, they'd be on -5 points right now, which honestly, I don't think puts them out of the running for safety when you look at how bad some of the teams in the league are. Yeah. So I don't know if you guys have any additional thoughts on this one, but
I mean, I won't pretend to understand all the workings of financial fair play. If you ask me and probably any other Premier League fan, there's other clubs that have surely breached it more than Everton have. But I don't know. I don't think it'll happen, to be honest. I mean, maybe it's just because I haven't seen it happen in the Premier League since I've been watching, but I just can't foresee a scenario where this actually goes through.
Yeah, when I heard this news, I thought it had gone through, but apparently it was just like talk about it. So I definitely don't think it'll happen, just because, you know, surely there would have been other instances where it happened, but you know, if it does happen, I'm glad it's Everton, because I know we all kind of hate Everton a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that, like, oh, you have point deduction, send it out. But like, they have just spent so much money over the years, and it's quite ridiculous. I mean, you know, if you want to sign a bunch of players, that's fine. But it's the amount of money they've spent on, you know, below average players who barely made appearances. I mean, when we did that random signing segment, we talked about Everton so much. So I mean,
I know there were 16 slots available, and there was like 8 or 9 Everton players among the 16.
So it shouldn't really be a surprise that, you know, they're getting, you know, investigated like this. So
I might be disappointed if they get a point deduction, because then if they get relegated, they can blame it on that. I want them to get relegated and just have to face the facts that they're terrible.
Yeah.
No, I don't want them to have any excuses available.
But they can't be mad that they just spend shitloads of money on shit. So. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
You know, it should be noted, by the way, that Man City have been charged with 115 breaches of the financial fair play regulations, which, of course, Everton were only charged with one. So that means that if City were to win every single remaining game they have this season, if we're holding the logic consistent, that means they will finish with a nice sum of -1,272 points at the end of this season. So I'm looking forward...
Is that a 12-point deduction for every single charge?
Yeah. So if I'm, you know, looking forward to seeing them in the Conference South next season.
Yeah.
obviously,
could
not
you imagine that City team there? Jesus. 100-0
every game. Yeah. So our other unconfirmed piece of news, but it has been circulating, and we have been talking about it, you know, some instances in the last few shows that Bournemouth have had a rough go of things lately, and the rumor is that they may be looking to pull the trigger on manager Andoni Iraola, which comes after a game, which we're going to speak about here in a minute, where they lost to Gary O'Neill, who they let go in the summer. So what fools they must feel at this time for letting him go. You know, it's an interesting one for me, because when Spurs played Bournemouth at the beginning of the season, I thought, well, yeah, they didn't really look like scoring, but they were fairly organized, fairly solid defensively. They were good in the press. They made some good signings. So I'm a little surprised that it's come to this, to be honest. Like, yeah. if you had told me two teams were without a win at the start of the Premier League season, I would not have picked Bournemouth.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like every time I've watched them play, I've had something good to take away from it. But, you know, if you don't get points, then you don't get points. So maybe it's too early. I don't know. I think when it's a team like Bournemouth, you really need every point you can get. So, and I mean, I think all of us were, but I remember talking about how confused I was by them letting Gary O'Neill go in the first place. I thought it was just such a big mistake. So I kind of hope it happens following this defeat. I just think it's poetic justice, right?
Yeah. And I, you know, as a fan who's supported the team, who's, you know, run through managers like, you know, Man City runs through signings, I guess, or Everton for that matter. You know, you kind of want, if it's obviously not working at the beginning, you know, obviously thing, you know, rebuilds and stuff like that take time, but you know, if you're like not doing any sort of progress, you're not getting a win or anything like that, you kind of have to pull the trigger. That way you can adjust and you get the rest of the season to figure it out.
Well, maybe we saw this with Leicester last year. It's like, you know, they're losing every game, but you know, they have some bright spots here and there. They have some excuses. Their players are injured. Let's give Brendan Rodgers some more time. And then, you know, lo and behold, relegation. So you can't really afford to play around.
Yeah.
And it should be worth noting, I mean, we're 9 games into the season and they've already played Liverpool away, Spurs, Chelsea, Brighton, Arsenal. So they haven't exactly had an easy schedule. They've had a lot of big teams come to town, or they've been to a lot of big teams already. This is a new thing that the internet has come up with to disparage Spurs for being at the top of the league, is the fixture difficulty index, which
I've never Spurs even heard
have,
of that.
Yeah. Spurs are apparently have had the easiest fixtures in the league. But Bournemouth have had the hardest, you know, it's a subjective metric obviously, but it is something to consider that they've had a difficult start. But then you look at their last 2 games, a 3-0 defeat to Everton and a comeback defeat from Wolves when they had a silly, silly red card too. So that is a perfect segue for us to talk about this game. And I would like to point out that the Korean guy, as Pep calls him, has been Wolves' best player this season and has been an absolute revelation. I think he wasn't starting games at first and he started scoring and assisting off the bench, and now he's been placed into the team, rightfully so, and he's continuing to contribute at a high level. So I think that's a huge thing for Wolves because, you know, they lost Raul Jimenez. They kind of lost him a long time ago whenever the injury happened, and they haven't really had a talismanic scorer since then. So someone like Hwang, who can come in, he obviously assisted the late winner, and he can make a difference. So wanted to give a shout out to him for a good performance.
Yeah, I think Pedro Neto's really getting all of the applause right now. And I mean, he's playing extremely well. I think it's 6 goal involvements in his last 6 games or something like that. But like you said, you know, they've really just needed a goal scorer this season. And since Raul Jimenez has been gone, and Hwang Hee-chan scoring and assisting in big games consistently. Yeah, it's just good to see. And I think as well, Cunha kind of coming to fruition, starting to actually look like their record signing, playing how he should. I was very interested by the fact that he seems more like a center. I mean, this is all, what's the word? Oh God. When it's just about, what's the word for like when the words have, you're just changing what it's called, but it's kind of the same thing.
Like a euphemism?
No. Anyway, whatever. He's more of a center forward, creative player, not an out-and-out striker. But when you have wingers that are playing so well, like Hwang Hee-chan and Pedro Neto, you kind of just want that creative force. You know, your Bobby Firmino type of striker who happens to also be Brazilian, who's more of a creative outlet and just kind of lets the wingers do their thing. Which I wrote in my notes, wingers doing winger things. Because Wolves' attack, and specifically their wingers, without a doubt, their bright spot this season. I mean, they're just really fun to watch, especially recently.
The thing, when I look at Bournemouth and Wolves, I would both say that their strengths lie in their attack. I mean, you know, everything Reese and Gage just said about Wolves' attack, but, you know, I've been impressed with, you know, Solanke still doing okay for them. Watara has been a great signing for them, you know, on the wing. But I look at their defense, and both of them, and, you know, that's why I think they're, you know, struggling a little bit this season. You know, with Wolves, Craig Dawson's still a decent defender, but obviously getting up there in age. I haven't been too convinced about Max Kellerman for the longest time, but you know, he seems to be okay. And then with Bournemouth, I looked in this last game against Wolves, they're all so young, and you know, they're all prone to the mistake, because you know, they're new, some of them are new signings, and so it's just like they need, I feel like it's good for teams like Bournemouth and Wolves to have a sound defense, that way they can, you know, at least get a point in these tough games. But you know, it's just kind of hard to see, you know, Bournemouth and Wolves, you know, doing good when their defense is struggling a little bit.
Semantics was the word I was looking for, by the
Semantics.
Way. Just had a total brain fart.
I want to come to the defense quickly just of Craig Dawson. I understand your point that he is getting up there in age and they're going to have to look for a long-term solution, but I actually think he's had a brilliant season so far.
I think he's the best defender.
No, I agree. I'm just saying, like, obviously he's not as spry as he once was. He's, sure. Let's see how old he is.
Probably 34, I'd say. That's my guess. But
33. He's about to be okay. 34.
Yeah, so he marked Erling Haaland into the ground in their game against their win over Man City. I think he's, you know, him and Saliba probably are tied for best performance against City defensively this season. So
no, I
do take your point.
No, I agree that he's been good. I'm that was just something I come off the top of my head, but they've rotated their defense a lot this season, so maybe he's struggling to deal with the fact that he's had different defenders alongside of him.
You know, another defensive-minded player that I think deserves a shout-out, at least for this specific game, is Traore for Wolves at CDM. He's a new signing, correct?
I think they signed him in January. I'll verify this, but...
Anyway, regardless, he kind of went under the radar for me if they did sign him in January. But yeah, in this game especially, I thought he had a really, really solid performance.
They signed him on deadline day last summer.
Gotcha. Last summer, so he's been here a year.
Yeah, but He was only on loan, and then they bought him permanently.
Okay.
So, but yeah, someone who's only recently been integrated into the team. Of course, he only had 10 appearances all of last season, and I think most of them were substitutes. So yeah, someone who's only recently been integrated into the team. Of course, that he's helped out by them losing Mateus Nunez, who, you know, we thought was going to be a key piece for them, but they have managed to find some bodies who can fill in the interim and maybe, you know, go forward, because Traore is only 22. So lots of room to develop for him. And then of course, João Gomes, who's looked good so far this summer, very box to box presence, very physical. So lots of positives, I think, for Wolves, who are a team that I was very down on at the start of the season, especially after losing Lopetegui. So in such a, I don't even know what the word I'm looking for. Now I can't think of a word, but in just, I was going to say erroneous, but that doesn't make any sense. In such an unceremonious way. How about that? Before the season began. So as far as Bournemouth, I do like Dom Solanke, but I do sometimes wonder when they're playing, who is going to score their goals. I know Solanke scored a goal in this game, but he feels a bit to me like someone who's more of a facilitator rather than someone who is going to be at the end of every single move. He feels like someone who's a little involved in build up, but maybe doesn't have the end product. So I know it's easier said than done, but
I really like Anthony as far as their attack, but I don't think he's quite there yet.
You know, I honestly think they could benefit from someone like the guy who scored the winner in this game, Sasha Kalajic, who is just a massive 8 foot tall shithouse, essentially.
Yeah, just a big guy.
Yeah, who can come on at the end of games and win aerial duels.
Who didn't they have someone like that last season?
Kiefer Moore is the name. The name you're probably thinking of, and he did come on at the end of the game, but
he can't be the guy. He can't be the guy.
And Kalajic isn't the guy for Wolves either. But maybe if he could start coming on a little earlier and winning some aerial duels and that kind of thing, then it could be to the benefit. So, okay, let's. Well, Ethan, unfortunately, we're gonna have to do this, but we have to move on and start talking about Crystal Palace here a little bit.
So yeah, my team, Crystal Palace, lost a tough one to Newcastle 4-0 at St. James's Park. All I could say is that this was very much a very off day for us. I mean, it looked from, like, at the beginning, it looked like we were completely out of it, you know. just didn't look out for it. A very weird goal to concede in the fourth minute from Jacob Murphy. And then since then, it all kind of just... The Strauss, yeah. It kind of just fell apart after that. You know, Newcastle going to our weak point every time with the back post cross to get over the old man, Joel Ward, most of the time. But, yeah, it was just very off. They didn't look up for it. Gehi had a few mistakes, which he usually never does. And then the fourth goal, I mean, Wilson, or we literally had an attack, and then they came back and scored immediately from it. So it just looked like a very off day for us. I'm trying to take as many benefit or positives as I can. We did get a return to the team with Jefferson Lerma and Cheick Doucouré. And then we had a few guys on the bench who were fit, like Ahamada was back. And we got to see a debut for Mateus França, which I was excited to see him come on. It seemed like him and Ahamada and Rakitić too, all of our young guys coming on, looked like they had the confidence to go forward and try at least get a goal back. So I'm excited for them to be more involved. But
I'm very curious because it seems, at least from what I could see of his debut, that obviously he's on the wing, but he's kind of just drifting between wing and cam, because a lot of his bright moments was actually from sort of a cam position, kind of trying to play some players through. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's purely because there was no Ezzy in the side, and so he's kind of covering for both, or that will be kind of a thing that happens, because that was something I mentioned there being a possibility of, because Ezzy kind of does the same thing in reverse, right? He plays cam but likes to drift to the wing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think when Ezzy's back, I don't obviously he's injured right now, right?
Yeah.
I don't know the extent of the injury, but I'd be very curious to see what kind of tactical things are going on there between the two of them.
Yeah. And I'd still trying to figure out. I did notice that though, and I thought that was interesting. I mean, we only saw 20 minutes of it, so we'll obviously see more of it going forward. It was funny, I think it was either yesterday or day before that, but our under 20 somethings, I don't know which one, had a game against Monaco, some competition or something, but France actually scored. And so that makes me excited. It makes me excited to see that, you know, he felt so confident in this game and then scoring a goal in a game like that. I'm like really excited to see. And then not that it might make a huge difference, but Olise should be on the bench against Spurs on Friday. So it's good to see some of our injuries are getting better, but yeah. Very, very, very poor performance.
The score was really flattering for Newcastle too, because like we mentioned, the Schloss, that just kind of happens, whatever. Yeah. But then, the the Gehi slip.
That one was crazy to me.
It's another just really unfortunate one.
Yeah. Because that really doesn't happen a lot.
And especially it was really from freakish. Gehi. It's he's got so much credit, right? We talk about credit in the bank, you know. Gehi's got so much. So, you know, it just kind of happens and you have to move on. But I think, you know, 4-0 is very flattering for sure.
Yeah. In no way, shape, or form did I think we deserved a point from this game. But yeah, I thought the first goal and the third goal, I was like, man, that's just unfortunate. So yeah, hopefully, I know it'll be tough considering the form that Tottenham are in right now, but hopefully we'll do better in that game on Friday.
Do you reckon França might start?
Probably not. Just because I still think he's getting used to it, being in England and stuff like that. But he'll definitely make an appearance.
A player who I was a little surprised not to start was Rakitić. What has to happen for him to start? Every attacking player ever is injured, and they're instead opting to play a striker on the wing and Ayew, who is arguably also at least used to be a striker on the wing. Now he's more of a winger, right? But, you know, I don't know. Like, what does he have to do to get into the side? Especially coming off, I thought he had a really good performance the previous week.
I think some sort of meteor needs to hit the training ground, and he just has to not be there. So, I've been impressed with him too. I mean, I was not too confident on him at the beginning of the season, just because I felt like, you know, he's still making the adjustment to the Premier League after having a great season with Charlton Athletic. When he came on for, I don't know who was injured, but he came on for someone who was injured against Forest, and I thought he looked pretty good. That was like my one complaint, is that, you know, usually Metedward works pretty well, but in this game, obviously, it didn't. And so I thought, you know, we should have got him on a lot sooner for Meteta. That way, I prefer Edward. If we're going to have a lone striker, have Edward up front and then stick IU and Rexaki on the wing. So, yeah. So hopefully we adapt and change.
As far as Newcastle, I don't know if we talked about this last episode. It's kind of newish, all the Tonali stuff. Obviously, more gambling things going on in the Premier League. Who's surprised, given the fact that every team ever is sponsored by some gambling company, right? Looking at a 10-month ban, I think it was.
Yeah.
So it would put him out of for the full season and the Euros. Who I believe is the record signing. But yeah, with the news coming out, I thought, you know, bad news for sure. Like this, I thought he looked pretty good for them so far. But, and I know this one game can't be the sole indicator, but I think they might be okay without him. I think their team is just full of workhorses for one. I mean, every player that they have just absolutely runs himself into the ground. But also they have a lot of creative players that I think kind of just make up for it. I think with this game, they've overtaken Brighton for most goals scored in the Prem this season. So they are just scoring for fun right now. Also, Joe Willock is about to come back from injury, and he was a big player for them before his injury. So I think they might actually be okay. I'm definitely less worried about it. We'll have to see, though, because, you know, it's only really been a game, maybe two, since he's stopped playing for this investigation.
All right, Reese. Take it away here at the 2-2 draw over at Stamford Bridge. Yeah, I'll just let you have the floor because I'm sure you have quite a few thoughts on this game.
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of go in reverse. So just looking at the results, I'm happy with the draw given the context. I think the context being we played pretty badly. I don't really, at least after the first half, I thought we don't really deserve anything from this game. I think second half we were a lot better. And I think not that Chelsea didn't deserve to score, but the nature in which they scored was just really unfortunate. So
the
I think
Schross.
Yeah, the Schross, and then the penalty that I'm not saying wasn't the penalty, but there's some debate online. You know, I actually am fine with it being a penalty. I think it is close proximity. I don't really think his arm's unnatural. I think, you know, that's just kind of what you do when you jump, but you know, I'm fine with it being a penalty. But yeah, we just didn't look very good in this game. I thought I didn't think we looked necessarily like, it wasn't like, oh my God, we're playing terrible. It just wasn't up to our standard, I would say. I think at least in the first half, Chelsea, I thought, put in their best performance of the season. So credit to them. All the metrics have been saying they've been underperforming. They really just need to score. And, you know, getting goals, however you can take them, whether it's a Schross or whatever, is really important, especially for Mudryk, right? Mudryk getting on the score sheet is huge for them because he just needs to get some kind of confidence going and then he can get some goals. I thought Cole Palmer had a really good game, who was a player that I think all of us were a little surprised, at least about the fee, given how many Premier League appearances he had before his transfer. But I thought he had a good game. So yeah, I wanted to get my Arsenal bias, you know, remove myself from Arsenal bias for a second and give Chelsea some props because, you know, I thought they did play well. As far as my thoughts on Arsenal, I think, you know, it's not panic stations. I think a couple players who don't normally have a bad game had a bad game. One of which, Odegaard. I thought Odegaard pretty much was non-existent in this game. And unfortunately, because of how integral he is and how rare it is that he puts in a poor performance, when he does, it really affects the whole side. So I think, you know, hopefully he plays better. That's just all I have to say. I think, it is what it is. The other thing, Zinchenko. The past couple games, I've not been too impressed. But the other side of that is that every time Tomiyasu's come in, I've been very impressed. And there's quiet rumblings around on Arsenal Twitter, and even, you know, given the fact that Tomiyasu came on at halftime in this game and then started the Champions League game yesterday, that Tomiyasu is looking more and more like he's about to displace Zinchenko. And I think the main concern was, how is he going to play this inverted role? Because there's been no questions about his defensive abilities. I think, you know, you can watch Tomiyasu and you can see he's definitely better defensively than Zinchenko is. He's also taller. He's just a bigger presence. He has gotten really good at this inverted role. And he offers a couple different things as well. I mean, we saw it going back to the City game. He's so tall that he can kind of push forward almost as a second striker and add something to the attack there. So I would not be surprised to see him start on the weekend. I actually think he probably should. I think he's earned it. I think Zinchenko hasn't been so bad that I'm screaming and crying for him to not start. Like, if Zinchenko starts, I'm fine with it. I think Tomiyasu has been good enough that he should play this weekend.
Zinchenko is almost a victim of his own role in some ways, because he's obviously not a natural left back, although he has probably played the majority of his career there. His inclinations are obviously going to be more towards central areas and towards pushing forward and playing creatively. Well, you mentioned the last two games he hasn't quite been up to scratch. I think a large part of that is due to the fact that he is coming up against a team that plays with very wide touchline wingers. And I think that obviously forces him to be a bit more defensively sound, in that when Zinchenko's in midfield, space exists behind the left fullback slot, right? Well, if Chelsea are going to staple their wingers to the touchline, then Zinchenko is pretty restricted in terms of his ability to go in field. And I think in a lot of ways, that just kind of damns him from the beginning. And I think that's probably why Arteta made the change as early as he did to get Tomiyasu into the game, is because he recognized, okay, Sterling is giving Zinchenko a hard time here. Let's get someone who's a bit more defensively sound, who's going to occupy those wide areas and take away the space. So for me, it honestly doesn't really reflect on Zinchenko in any way. It's more of just Arteta has had him playing this role, which he fits very well. And it just, there is a tactic that counteracts it very well.
And I definitely agree. What's happened. And I think, Tomiyasu, he's the answer for that, right? Because he is just better at fulfilling the more traditional fullback role. The unfortunate news for Zinchenko is that Tomiyasu is becoming pretty good at playing inverted as well.
Right.
So he's kind of just becoming good at both. So something has to give there. The other thing I wanted to mention in this game, because I actually haven't looked into it that much, but a lot of Arsenal fans online, and you know, this will happen every time there's a high profile game, but are crying and moaning about the non-decision with Robert Sanchez absolutely clattering Jesus in the box. At the time, I didn't really think anything of it. Maybe because goalkeeper immunity, I don't know. Like, typically you see a goalie come out, he kind of runs into someone, you're like, well, the goalie has to go for the ball. The thing is that he was nowhere near the ball, like didn't touch it at all. And the thing that is interesting is that this is very similar to the Onana.
Onana, I was going to bring that up, actually.
That Wolves got an apology for. So there's precedent that this should be a penalty. It, once again, wasn't given in this game. Again, I think a draw is deserved. I think we didn't play well in the first half. We did in the second. I'm fine with the draw. I just think it's definitely interesting to look into. And if this decision is one where they come back with a PGMOL apology, this would now be three apologies that we have received, I believe, this season. So not a good look.
Ball doesn't lie, I guess, because he passed it straight to Declan Rice for the opening goal.
Yeah, that goal, I mean, you know, it looks easy, but seeing some of the different,
it's a ridiculous finish.
Yeah, it's actually really, really impressive, because he's got to curl it around Enzo, because Enzo's right in front of him. But he also has to curl it away from the goalie, because Robert Sanchez is kind of making his way back. So, yeah, there's one specific angle that is just like Oh, so nice to see. And then he quoted he referenced the Beckham documentary after the game, which I thought was top.
Yeah. Okay, guy.
Well, he was just like, he said something about like, it talks about, you just have to shoot when like you have the opportunity, like you can't second guess. So I thought that was interesting, but proving his worth. I was talking to my dad about this. You can say whatever you want. You can argue about, is he playing the role correctly? Is he doing this? Is he doing that? I already don't like price tag arguments. And this is something that's been said, not by me, but by other people. No one's talking about Declan Rice's price tag. People can talk about whether or not he's performing his specific role correctly, but for him to make a 100 million pound move and no one even discuss it after the fact is just so impressive to me. I think, at least right now, worth every penny.
Good point. I mean, I was just thinking when you said that, I don't think I've seen anyone criticize the price tag or criticize the, fact that, I do criticize him for turning like an aircraft carrier, but apart from that, I mean, he's kind of gone, I want to say under the radar, but that's almost a good thing for a number six, right? Because the less you notice them, it means they're doing their job. So I think that's a good point.
Yeah.
I don't know if you had any other options, if you had any other opinions on the game.
No, that's all I got.
In that case, I'm going to shift us right along to the Monday night game, which I actually ended up, through a bizarre circumstance of events, getting to watch at home in spite of the fact that, I was working. I was still able to watch the game. Spurs taking a 2-0 win over Fulham, which truthfully could have been about 25-0 if if Richarlison could shoot and if Kulusevski would shoot. I think it could have been about 25-0 for either of them. Not that Spurs didn't give up any chances either, but I think some of the best football we've played was in the first half of that game. There was a lot of really intricate, delicate passing moves, lots of interchange in the final third. Admittedly, some of the worst football we've played was in the second half of this game. So something can be said about the fact that we were 2-0 up and a large body of the starting 11 had been subbed off, and we know we're conserving energy because we have a game against Palace on Friday, which is ridiculous that we're having to play a game on Monday and then Friday back to back, which I guess we're not in Europe, but still, I mean, I don't think I can ever remember a time when that's happened to any team, let alone Spurs. So it is what it is. I'm not like throwing a fit about it. I just think it's crazy, especially because it makes it so much harder to watch here in the States. When it's happening in the middle of the workday. So it's a little bit frustrating, but that it is what it is. I want to give a huge shout out to someone who I think made two saves in pivotal moments in this game. And that is Vicario. Who else? Because I said saves, right? But Fulham had a corner in the 10th minute after a great, series of Spurs attacks that didn't go in. Polina with a great header from the edge of the box. Lots of power on it. Vicario makes a diving save. Really convincing stop as well. Parried it out into a good area. And then, something could be said about whether or not the finish could have been better, but Raul Jimenez threw on goal in the 84th minute when it's 2-0, Wolves, I was thinking of Jimenez, Fulham get a goal back and things start to shift a little bit, but Vicario comes up trumps again with a great save. And I think it comes at an interesting time on a weekend where, this is the first time maybe that David Raya has been called into question. And I think Spurs fans were obviously devastated whenever we missed out on him in the summer. And I'm not saying that he's, extreme levels of magnitude worse than Vicario, but so far I'd rather have Vicario as we stand. And I did not think that in the summer. I was thinking, we're getting our second choice option. We're getting, Levy just didn't want to pay the money, all this narrative that goes around. Right. And so far I have been so, so impressed by him. He's hardly put a foot wrong, to tell you the truth. He did, almost give away a pass out from the back in this very game. But other than that, I mean, the guy's been sensational. He's made some incredible saves. His distribution is good, which is new for Spurs. And he actually comes and collects corners, which is new for Spurs as well. So really, really great stuff from him. The Richarlison question, which probably will not go away for the remainder of this season, or at least as long as he's in the team, as far as I know, is it worth having him in the team? I think on the basis of the performance against Fulham, I would actually say yes. I think he was very industrious. I think he presses really well, and he was involved in several moves that ended with him, you know, putting in a good delivery or putting in a good through ball, which no one ended up scoring apart from the opening goal, which was largely won back due to the scored due to the press. Is it worth having him in the team? I think for now, he hasn't done anything to lose his place. If anything, Kulusevski actually frustrated me more in this game than he did. So I think for now, he still warrants a place in the team. I think it's interesting that we're persisting with him on the left and Son through the middle. I think it actually has been working better so far than the inverse of that. So perhaps that's Richarlison's new role. I mean, I think when he first came into the Premier League for Watford, and then later, you know, in his early seasons at Everton, that's what he was a left-sided player who played on the left of a front three or in midfield. And he kind of gradually went more and more forward as Everton needed it. But I'm not sure. I think I'm not convinced. I still think we need to buy a winger in January. I am, of course, interested to see our most expensive signing of the summer, Brennan Johnson, who hasn't had too much chance to come in.
That's what I was going to mention. I think had he not suffered that injury against us, he would already be starting.
Yeah,
he looked pretty bright in his appearance.
And he started the North London Derby, which I think goes a long way to tell you what Postecoglou is interested in. So I'm curious. I think the lineup on Friday will tell us a lot. I think if Postecoglou still has any patience for Richarlison, I think he'll start against Palace, because he did play well against Fulham, just no end product there. But if Johnson starts, then maybe Postecoglou is starting to think, well, we've wasted enough time on this experiment, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that happens. Like I said, I still think we need a winger in January, or maybe an out-and-out striker if you want to move Son back to the middle, but or back to the left. It's unlikely that you're going to be able to get a striker at a good price in January, so winger it is, maybe. Højbjerg, actually, that's a big talking point, because Bissouma was obviously suspended for this game, and he will be suspended again once he picks up his next yellow card, which will probably happen on Friday, truthfully. So I think I was actually very impressed by Højbjerg, truthfully. So in the event that we need him to deputize for Bissouma, I'm pretty comfortable with it. I think, again, once Bissouma and Sarr both leave for AFCON in January, that's going to be a big problem. I'm going to go ahead and say that we need to sign a midfielder in January as well, and a center back. So we need one of each, basically, in January. And I think that's kind of leftovers from this window, because, you know, we were in for several center backs at the end of the window, Lloyd Kelly, Trevor Chalaba, and then we were obviously in for Conor Gallagher pretty heavily at the end of the window. And those deals collapsed at the end. So I think it goes to show that Spurs are interested in making those moves. So hopefully at least two of those three will get done, I'd say, realistically.
I wanted to revisit, you kind of brought up the press. I wanted to revisit y'all's press, because it's, to you know, pun not intended, it impressed me. You know, you mentioned the first goal largely coming from the press. Both of them did.
Yeah.
If you look really closely, and it's the same trigger too. Extremely organized press. It's one of those presses where y'all are just kind of targeting one player. Like, as soon as he gets the ball, you collapse on him. And in this case, it was Bassey or Basie. I don't know how to say his name. Basie.
I think it's Bassey. I don't actually Bassey. Know,
he was from Celtic, correct?
He was actually at Rangers. So nice one. And then he went to Ajax and then came to Fulham. So.
Yeah, the first goal, obviously, I think y'all stole the ball from him directly, or made him misplay a pass. I can't remember. I think it was
a hospital pass out to Højbjerg. Yeah.
Same thing with the second goal. It just kind of took a little bit. You forced a turnover from Bassey. Is that what we decided? I can't even remember.
I don't know.
You forced a turnover from him once again. It goes a little bit deeper into midfield, but y'all are able to move it quickly and get the goal. So, yeah, both the goals direct. expect results from y'all's press in this game. And it's not something I necessarily expected with the season starting anyway. But, you know, I think any top side, it's really important these days, especially to have a good press. So
I'll tell you who the heart of the press is, too. And that's James motherfucking Madison. This guy is an animal. I cannot describe to you how good this guy is on every level. I've said it so many times. Like, I knew he was good at Leicester, but I didn't know he was this good. This guy's a joke, seriously. He gets his third goal for the club, which is very exciting stuff. But yeah, what he does off the ball is almost as impressive as what he does on the ball. He never stops running. Of course, it is frightening to think what's going to happen if he gets an injury or, you know, has to serve a suspension or something.
Yeah.
Because Lo Celso is there, but not quite the same player, I would say. And it is interesting that you bring up the trigger. And I like the fact that we're developing specific triggers based on the opposition. Because the interesting thing about Fulham, and this happens almost never, is that in a back four, both of their center backs were left-footed. So obviously Tim Ream is left-footed, and then Calvin Bassey, who is playing on the right, is left-footed as well. So how often are you going to have that particular pressing trigger where every time Bassey is shown onto his right foot, the press just explodes? And I think it's really interesting to see Postecoglou tailoring the press. And I think I want to give credit too, by the way, one of our assistant coaches, Matt Wells, apparently is the guy who is in charge of orchestrating the press. Postecoglou, it by his own admission, has very little to do with it. So kind of an interesting thing there. So yeah, I don't have too many thoughts on Fulham. I think they were just crap, but I don't think it was because they are crap. I think they were just crap on the day, and
the
they'll
one
be fine
thought I have
going
about
forward.
Them is that it seemed, at least in this game, but I suspect if I was to watch all of their games, it would be like this, was that their main attacking outlet is Robinson.
yeah.
Doing an overlapping run, which, you know, he's kind of known for that even in the US, but no one was making good runs into the box. And he had quite a few decent passes that someone has to get onto.
Not till Harry Wilson came on. I was actually impressed by Harry Wilson's movement, but yeah, you are right.
If he's going to be their main source of attacking throughput, someone's got to make some kind of corresponding run in the box.
I think that will wrap us up on our game reviews this week, unless Ethan has something.
In honor of Josh, I went and looked up how Leicester are doing, and they're still top. They are 5 points ahead of Ipswich. Since we have last recorded an episode, they've beaten Swansea 3-1 and Leicester 1-0. Or not, sorry, Sunderland 1-0.
In their last four games, by the way, all wins, they've conceded once. So that's not too bad.
So yeah, it really begs the question, if they had gotten rid of Brendan Rodgers earlier last season, would they have
stayed? Oh my God. They've conceded practically no goals this season. We're 13 games into the season and they've conceded 7 goals. That's incredible stuff from Leicester.
Yeah, so probably we'll see them back up, which is good. Get the podcast going again, all of us now. But yeah, it is crazy that they're playing so well.
They are 14 points clear of third already. Yeah, so well, I think they're on track. Yeah. They're on track to come back up. So
Josh should be happy whenever he gets back.
And Ipswich are quite clear too as well. So they're, I guess they're going to be favorites to come up. So that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
But all right, Ethan, we'll stick with you here, and we'll do the album of the week at this time, since we don't have a jersey, courtesy of Josh.
Right. I should have thought of that too, but I do not have one on hand. But I've definitely picked this album before, but you know, I've just, when I think about it more, I realize how nostalgic it is for me, because I think it's one of the first albums that my dad has showed me, and it's one of his favorite bands. But I've gone with The Who's Next Again. You know, it's got a good mix of, you know, sounding really great, but also having a lot of good written lyrics. Behind Blue Eyes is one of my favorite songs that's ever been written. So yeah.
Iconic album cover too.
Right. And a lot of iconic songs for sure. Or if not songs, sound bites like the screaming and the Baba O'Reilly intro. But yeah, if you don't listen to the whole album, at least listen to Behind Blue Eyes. That's a great song.
I'm going to give a jersey of the week, and it's actually one of Ethan's jerseys, so shout out to me. And that is because the Texas Rangers are going to the World Series. So
Ethan actually divulged to me he doesn't own a Texas Rangers jersey.
Ooh, I thought you did. I really thought you did.
It's funny because I own a few just from my travels and visiting other stadiums, but I don't have a Rangers jersey, which is very big fan of me. But I'll take the fact that I was born in Arlington and run with it. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah, of course, it's been since the year 2000, only one Dallas team has won a championship, and it was the Mavericks in 2011. So I am just fiending for some championship winning teams in the Dallas area.
I know. We're all depressed. We need some kind of win.
Man, game seven was so funny because me and Ethan were watching it with our friend Danielle, who's a Astros fan. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to kind of be nice.
We don't want to celebrate in front of her. And yeah,
but you know, the game starts.
We're driving back.
Three runs while we're driving home from dinner.
And she's driving. And I'm like,
she's the one driving. So we're just no noise. We're just sitting there. Yeah, and then, you know, the sound of the phones going off. It's like, the Rangers have another one. It's 3-0. And we're like.
And then we're watching it at home. And eventually she leaves early because she's got stuff. But obviously can't sit through that any longer. And as soon as the door shuts, Reese and I are like, hugging and dancing. And I'm like, oh my goodness. The thing that's crazy to me about the Rangers and the Astros this series was the home team never won.
I know. It's crazy.
I think this is only the second time in baseball postseason history this has happened.
I think so. But
and it wasn't like there were a couple of tight games, but there was a lot of absolute dismantlings, a lot of complete destruction score lines. So yeah it's interesting crazy stuff. Of course, we're all very, you know, Reese and I don't really even care about baseball, but we're just so fired up for a Dallas team to win something that I'm all of a sudden the biggest Rangers fan who's ever lived on Earth. So mm-hmm. I'm fired up. We're going to try to get together and watch some of the World Series games. So if you are watching the World Series, let us know. Let us know how your team did if you're in the United States or elsewhere.
Speaking of that, I think Gage pointed it out when we were eating together. Not too long ago, you pointed out that it was like our 10 year anniversary or something.
Yeah. So I moved to the Dallas area in 2013, which I was around. Well, we moved in May, I think, of 2013, but then I wouldn't have met these guys until school started, which would have been around August or September, give or take a few weeks for, you know, people to meet each other and whatever. And this is around the time 10 years ago that we would have all become friends. So Kind of an interesting point. It's a bummer that Josh isn't here to celebrate with us, but we'll have to let him know when he gets back. Nice stuff. 10 years of Slap. I think we're at the end of this will be 5 years of Slapcast. So
yeah,
shout out to us for making it that long. Shout out to you, the listener, for making it with us that long.
I know.
So good stuff, fellas. It's been an honor. It's been a privilege. So looking forward to 10 more and 10 more after that and 10 more after that. So
we're getting married, all of us.
Yeah, we're all. Yeah, we're actually starting a commune.
The four hole.
So, all right. We want to say a big thanks to you guys for listening. I want to say a big thanks to Ethan for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having us again. Thank you for hosting. And I'm happy about the Rangers and looking forward to the Tottenham Palace game.
Spurs versus Palace this week.
I am lying so hard right now.
And Reese, thanks for coming on as well.
Of course, and welcome back. Obviously, we missed you last episode, but it's good for you to be back. I'm also excited for the Spurs-Palace game. I will be borrowing a Palace jersey. I'm just now making that known. I'm not really, but I will be watching the game.
Yeah, no, I have a lot, yeah.
No, I won't borrow one. Okay. I'm a big Palace fan now, though.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's all. I think we hope you're all enjoying the Premier League. We hope you're staying safe, staying healthy, and it's a goodbye from us.